The contents of this page have not been reviewed or endorsed by the Chicago Bulls. All opinions expressed by Sam Smith are solely his own and do not reflect the opinions of the Chicago Bulls or their basketball operations staff, parent company, partners, or sponsors. His sources are not known to the Bulls, and he has no special access to information beyond the access and privileges that go along with being an NBA-accredited member of the media.
Hi, it's Sam Smith, and that was supposed to be a tough week for the Bulls. I seem to recall saying it was a heck week or heck of a week, but that really turned out to be a heck of a week, as it were, for the Bulls. 3-1 record, but really impressive games. Win over Miami, a big Sunday afternoon game on ABC. Lost to the Spurs, but terrific win over a Houston team that had been really hot, and then went into Miami right after that, played him right down to the end before losing, and then win over a Sacramento team that has obviously not been a playoff team this season, but a team that gave the Bulls probably their worst loss of the season. It was second worst in terms of points for the Clippers game, but that was the first game after Derrick Rose's season-ending injury, and players were certainly stunned coming in there from Portland afterward. But huge week for Joakim Noah, missing a triple-double by a point, by an assist, by two assists, basically overall outplaying Dwight Howard. And even though, and the numbers crowded across the board, better than Cousins, who is really a terrific talent, tremendously undisciplined, most likely probably a player really they can't win with, unless his attitude and his behavior changes dramatically and somebody actually shows him a basketball video. Sacramento really a completely out of control team. And it's remarkable they stay as close as they do a lot of games too. Point guard shoots all the time, doesn't pass to anybody. Cousins, you never know what he's going to do. You know he's going to be yelling at the referees, but entertaining certainly. And nothing really ever came of that silly Dunleavy stuff with him from the last game. But really a good week, and the amazing part of it is that stuff does happen in the NBA. The Bulls lose Derrick Rose for the season. The notion in the community actually is the Bulls should give up at that point back in November. Then for financial purposes, for long-term flexibility, which certainly made sense, even though we all wanted to keep Lou Alding in Chicago and see the team make a run with whatever they could. The Bulls trade Dane basically just for future considerations. And then the core is completely is give up the season. And it's just been, since that early January trade, last 2 months, really some terrific basketball, Noah. And it's hard to imagine just a week or 10 days before the coaches voted on the All-Star reserves, everybody was raising a question whether Noah would even make that All-Star team. And in fact, the week before, not that they're very good judges, actually, they're very entertaining. Barkley, particularly on that TNT show on Thursday night for the NBA national game. The group majority was that they did their picks the week before that Noah would not make the All-Star team. Of course, by the time the game was over, with the East winning, Frank Vogel keeping Noah in down the stretch over his own center Hibbert, because the West is playing too fast and too open. East actually wants to win the game. And Noah making an incredible run for numerous postseason awards, Defensive Player of the Year, All-NBA, and amazingly enough, a serious contender now in the MVP voting. Now, obviously, it's going to be Kevin Durant and LeBron James, and most likely Durant's going to win. LeBron, after his 60-some point game, is kind of poofed out a little bit. You can see he's kind of, even he's a little bit tired, a little bit worn down. And at some point with Miami, still a couple of games behind Indiana, even though as poorly as Indiana's been playing, or certainly inconsistently, that you get the sense Miami is going to start sitting those guys at some point. and give James rest, and really doesn't really matter for that team. Team that can win on the road, two championships. But Durant, most likely, unless something extraordinary happens, will and deservedly so be the MVP this season. But Noah, like I said, amazingly enough, joins that conversation for the top five. The MVP voting is for five, pick five players for that. There is no exact rule for it, so it's often understand. It's not most outstanding player. If it was most outstanding player, James would win, and Michael Jordan would have won every year. And I know there's a lot of people say, well, Michael Jordan should have won every year. But the Bulls, even when they won titles, didn't have the best record every year. And that award is really an alchemy of team success, player season, impact on the team, various factors sort of wound together. No, the Bulls are not going to have anywhere near any of the top records in the league, but certainly their record, even though it's long shot and it's certainly not, most likely not going to occur, they amazingly still have a shot to win 50 games this late in the season in late March. And from really, I'd almost have to say, not unanimity, but certainly a majority, at least in the mail I was getting, and if you turned on the local radio or TV, the fan reaction was, oh, you got to give up the season, get draft picks. And to their credit, players wanted to hear nothing of it. Management made it clear that the dang thing was independent of other things and didn't really entertain any trades, even though the notion around the NBA was that the Bulls were offloading players. You heard all sorts of bogus rumors about Dunleavy, about Heinrich, about any number of players, which wasn't the case. And certainly health played a big part. This has been Noah's healthiest season of his career. Taj Gibson's, to me, and I'll probably talk about that more with the voting coming up. Award voting starts the beginning of April. Really defines what most improved player is. A guy like Gerald Green, for instance, has had a terrific season, but it's more of about opportunities, doing the same thing he's always does. It's just opportunity, minutes, more shots, and that's usually what defines most improved. But to me, Gibson represents it more than anybody because he truly has improved his game. It's a different game than we've ever saw. Complete post-up game, drop-step moves inside, face-up jumpers with more length, more distance, terrific, and also the addition, obviously, of DJ Augustine. And I know some fans talk about, though, he should be most improved as well. Well, he, as Thibodeau often points out, he used to be a good player. He just lost opportunity, went to Indiana, was buried on the bench, went to Toronto, was even buried farther in the bench. But he'd been a solid starting point guard in Charlotte, averaging about 14-7, and pretty similar to what he's done with the Bulls, but provided an outside shooting component that the team really missed and didn't much have other than Mike Dunleavy. And by the way, we do have to give Dunleavy a little nod for that game last week where he, right before halftime, took a tremendous gash in the Houston game, charged from Chandler Parsons. And Dunleavy, by far, the Bulls have never been a team that takes a lot of charges. Gibson, Noah, as good of defenders as they are, Heinrich as well, none of them really take charges. And there's kind of an art to it. It's not flopping necessarily. It's getting in position, bracing yourself, and taking a shot. And Dunleavy has not only always been good at that, but brought the element to the Bulls, which they completely have lacked. By far, by multiples of three and four, has more charges than anybody on the roster, and took this huge hit from, certainly accidental, from Chandler Parsons as he came up, elbowed him in the face, Dunleavy gushing blood like you rarely see other than in a heavyweight fight. But anyway, Dunleavy's patched up, comes out after halftime with 10 stitches, his right side above his eye swollen up, turning colors already. Probably has the best quarter he's had all season. Scores 18 points on the way to 21. And then the Bulls pull away and beat a very good Houston team. And nice gesture by the Blackhawks to give him an honorary jersey for being a Blackhawk player, although he has more teeth than any of those players. But anyway, that said, looking ahead, really, so I don't know if you call it a test, but it'll be, you know, the statement game, measuring stick coming up Friday, 21st, spring beginning, all that crap, as it were. The Bulls are in Indiana on Friday, and then the Pacers are back in Chicago the following Monday. Bulls are going to look at the Pacers twice in 4 days, and the Pacers have really been stumbling. You know, we've all much applauded the moves for Andrew Bynum and Evan Turner, which cost them virtually nothing. But it does seem to have changed their chemistry. You know, there are elements to that, and it's very hard to measure except when you're with and around the team all the time. Even in the Bulls, as good a group as they are and as team-oriented, if you were bringing in two or three players who are going to play, they're taking away minutes, rotations change, and subtle movement, subtle changes with a team that's on a roll like that. You know, you rarely see top teams, and, you know, the Bulls in all those championship years never really added as much as fans in the sort of a, you know, a media and a fantasy version of let's bring in another scorer, let's bring in another shooter. Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause, they were always good about recognizing what worked, what fit together, and to stick with it and ride it out. And as the season goes on, you improve and get better. But I suspect Larry Bird, and I mentioned that he did a very interesting interview with the Indianapolis Star last week, talked about how his team's really not playing as hard as it needs to. The coach is not pushing his guys as much as he probably should. And I think what Bird is seeing is what some others are seeing, and that's why he made the moves, that this team is not championship ready. Really good team, good defense, but a team that doesn't score. And as much as Paul George was built up early in the season to be a superstar, he's not that kind of player. He's a terrific player. He's a legitimate all-star. But he's not the kind of guy to probably carry you through a tough series like that compared to a James or a Durant, and it's unfair to compare anybody to those kind of guys. And George was, you know, a long shot in the draft, pick number 10, probably has come farther than many, but a guy you really, you know, is a question whether you could rely upon. And I think Bird's seen that and felt he needed to make some moves, needed to say some things. So these will be interesting test games, both for the Bulls and the Pacers. I mean, these are important games for the Pacers because they could be seeing, you know, depending on how the playoffs go, they could be seeing the Bulls in the second round and could end up with a heck of a first round series. It doesn't look like it's going to happen. And I think the Pacers are going to hold on to number one because I think the Heat will back off at some point and not push it like they did last season. But really, one of the hottest teams playing really well and playing like they should have been playing all season is the Knicks. And I think that's the last thing the Pacers want to see in the first round. And that series was a lot closer last season, that second round series where the Knicks, the Pacers won in game six, knocked out the Knicks. And I think that's a team that could get into eight, not unlike 1999. That lockout season when the Knicks had some injuries and disruption early in the season, came together late, got to eight, and then got into the finals, eventually losing to the Spurs. And you could, I'm not saying that will occur, and Miami clearly is a top team in the East, but, you know, they've struggled as well too. So I think the East is going to be a lot more wide open, this notion that it's locked in. It's going to be Pacers and Heat in the conference finals, I think is well overstated. I think Indiana's vulnerable. I don't think Miami is as vulnerable, but they are somewhat because of Dwayne Wade's health situation. And if he goes out for any stretch in the playoffs, that puts a tremendous strain on him. And you could see the strain on James already for having to carry that team all season long. And reminds me a little bit what I saw Jordan in that 92-93 season. He got through it, but was truly exhausted. And it was tough getting through. And I think it's going to be tough for Miami as well. But I think the Pacers are a vulnerable kind of team as a result, and that's why I think these two games coming up with the Bulls are big games for them, too. Big games for the Bulls, obviously, because they want to show they can play with that team, plant a seed with them that, you know, if you get us in the playoffs, it's not going to be so easy. But I think the Pacers have to try to start reestablishing their dominance, which hasn't existed, really, for the last several weeks. But that all said, leads up to the story of the century this week. Phil Jackson going to those very Knicks. And I think probably Phil is, with the Knicks having finished last week with 6 wins in a row, amidst all the Phil rumors and talk and the acknowledgement, other than officially from the Knicks, that he's signed and gonna, you know, as a 5-year deal to run basketball operations. Phil probably is a contender for executive of the year this season, even before he goes to work there for the Knicks' sudden resurgence. But anyway, I'm not sure if we'll all make that case, but some of us can. Anyway, that said, that's going to be the story this week. Of course, anything that happens in New York is usually viewed the story there, even though that Knicks have been the most irrelevant team in the league, and the most irrelevant talked about team in history until about 2 weeks ago. Anyway, that said, I think that's going to be great for the Knicks. They've really underachieved this year. I think they're showing now how badly they've played unexpectedly. Coaching has been in disarray. You know, poor personnel with the roster. Artest in there finally got released. Kenyon Martin messing around. J.R. Smith's antics and just simply disrupted a whole team that shouldn't have been this bad. So I don't think Phil's going to have a huge fix when he comes in. You're still going to have a, I think Carmelo Anthony will clearly resign, no matter what things Phil might have said about him and hurt his feelings in previous years. We heard Kobe's feelings too when he wrote a book about Kobe, I think after the 04 season, and then came back and won 2 championships. And Kobe last week was practically begging the Lakers to keep Phil, hire Phil, as was Magic Johnson. So I think Knicks will have be over the cap. They'll have a salary cap exception. They'll get a decent player from that, maybe a point guard like Lowry. Tough guy, good point guard, having a great season in Toronto. They'll still have Anthony. They'll still have Tyson Chandler. Tim Hardaway Jr., I think, has been one of the top 3 or 4 rookies this year. Come on strong. Shumpert as well. And be able to put J.R. Smith back on the bench in a reserve role where you could bring him in, yank him, and take him out as time soon. So I think the Knicks will be able to run in place. And, you know, in Anthony's situation, I think you'll look and say, look, Magic Johnson and Kobe Bryant are begging this guy to stay with the organization. If I want to win, how do I justify walking away from Phil Jackson? So I think Anthony ends up signing a long-term deal. And then you get to the summer of 2015 where Bargnani, he'll be a decent guy you can bring off the bench next season, shoot the ball. But Bargnani's money comes off, Stoudemire and then Tyson Chandler, and that's like $60 million. Knicks will be well under, even with Anthony's contract, they'll be well under the cap to get a maximum player. It's already been, you know, speculated by me, of course, among others. That LeBron James, you know, how big would that be to win, come to New York, resuscitate, you know, save that team. Phil Jackson as the GM. LeBron going for more titles than Michael Jordan and Kobe Bryant. And what better place to do so and get the attention for it than New York City? They'll be writing, movies about LeBron by that time. And anyway, so that gives the Knicks a heck of a lot of possibilities and a legitimate future for the first time. So it's going to be a terrific ongoing story. Watching Phil, what he could do there. The questions about he's never been an executive. Can he do that? How can he deal with that Byzantine Knicks organization with owner Jim Dolan? And obviously all the media and the elements, and whether he'll stay in New York or go to L.A. And so it's going to be a zoo as well. And I always did love the Bronx Zoo, even when it wasn't the Yankees. So that said, even as we steam toward the close, the regular season's ending up with a lot of entertainment and excitement as well. NCAA tournaments beginning, at least I read that somewhere. And maybe I'll talk about that some more next week. But you know, it's going to be interesting watching Jabari Parker and Embiid from Kansas. Those two guys are basically considered the top 2 picks in the draft, if both of them decide to come out. Andrew Wiggins, who had been much discussed before the season, probably 3rd. And maybe Randall from Kentucky after that, or Exum has been mentioned. He's now playing the Australian guard. But I think that's going to be, and I wrote about this a little bit in my NBA column this week. It's going to be a heck of a choice with Embiid now having some back problems, but promoted by a lot of NBA teams as the guy with the biggest ceiling. And that's always dangerous, as we know, to take a chance on that, especially with a young kid with back problems versus Parker, you know, who looks like a really solid pro for years to come. So anyway, that's be something to watch for the tournament. But that said, the NBA still got a lot going down the stretch, even with just 15 or 16 games to go. So we'll get back with you next week. As you can tell, the excitement just continues.